better further away because it sounds like
I'd like to thank Rabbi Blezer and Rabbi Singer, I don't know if he's here, for the opportunity to give a shiur here. It's truly a kavod, and it's wonderful to be in this beautiful Beis Medrash that wasn't here too long ago. Baruch Hashem, a major accomplishment, and we should be zeicha here to be part of being magdal v'tayra and la'adira to make it a wonderful source of tayra for all of South Florida, and Rich Hashem and beyond. You never know; you got people who come here. We have lots of people coming into town and leaving town, and you could have hashpoyes to the far corners of the earth. I just want to give a hakdama that I did not double-check everything I'm going to be saying today. And so I'm quoting Svarim, And this is well known. When you quote Svarim, they quote Svarim very often. The original Sefer doesn't quite say what the other Sefer says. So that's number one. So I don't take exact responsibility, halach l'maisa, for everything I'm about to say. The second thing is that... you know, whatever, it's a very complicated sugya, I'm sure, as you've been seeing already, and therefore anything and halach l'maisa needs a shaila to be asked by a competent paisek. Just to start from the end a little bit, going backwards, there's just a Rama that I want to read first to give an idea of what we're talking about, and then we'll move back to the fundamental parts of this sugya. We're going to be talking about Dina d'Malchus Adina, and that is trying to understand the interplay between the laws of a government, and a non-Jewish government, and how that interacts with us in halacha. What are our halachic requirements? I just want to point out something. You know, the fact that there's certain halachic requirements, there aren't halachic requirements, doesn't mean that if there's no halachic requirements, you shouldn't be doing it anyway, right? There's maybe, you know, there's reasons to do it otherwise. I mean, you know, why does a guy do it? Because a guy does what the government says because he doesn't want to get arrested. Okay, so you have that shaloi l'shma. It's not like if you're allowed not to pay something, doesn't mean you shouldn't pay it. And halacha is not, you shouldn't pay it. And what's why, you know, you have to realize there are consequences even for certain things that are not brought down in halacha. But okay, that's tam seichel yasher. And so we're going to be talking about these different kinds of situations here, the interplay between what the government says and what halacha requires us to do, and how do you put these two things together. There are on a sheer of situations that are relevant to this. I'm not going to be giving halacha maisa so much in specific cases. There will be mentioned a few cases just as examples. But just to get the fundamental ideas behind this clash between halacha and between what the federal, what the government tells us, any kind of government. So and by the way, I just mentioned something about the Jewish government. Jewish governments are more complicated, by the way. We're not talking about that at all. That's a whole other issue. The Rishonim start discussing that issue, how to deal with non-halachic government entities, Jewish entities. It says like this, the Ramah just finishes off towards the end of the halachas of Dina d'Malchus Adina over here. There's a Ramah that says that a couple of interesting things. That he says that the Mechaber started out saying that a king has sorts of arbitrary powers, that he can go ahead and confiscate things, etc. He goes through a whole long thing. And then the Ramah says, V'imchokak l'bal umnes achas. So, I don't think you have this there. Is that if the government went ahead, if the king went ahead, we'll start with that with the king, we're talking about a king specifically, in those days that was the standard form of government. V'im chokak l'bal umnes achas, k'gon shechokak l'malvi beribis ezadover. So, for example, if a government goes ahead and passes a law that people who lend money beribis, they have to pay a special tax. You have to pay an extra 3% tax more than anyone else. Yesh Aymrim, there are those that say, Deloy Aminun Dina de Malchus Adina. Hoyo Veino Chokok Lakhoil. So the Rambam brings down that number one is that something as dina de malchus adina has to be a general law. They can't pick on anybody specifically. It has to be equally spread among everybody. And that's number one. Another example is Yesh Armin Dalei Arina Dina Malchus Adina El Bemisim Umichsim Hatluyim Bekarka. There are those that say that it only applies to taxes, number one. And number two, it's only when it is connected to something relevant in the ground. We're going to talk about this in a moment because the king has the right to tell you, you have no right to live in this country. It's my land. It's under my control. And therefore, get out of here. If you want to live here, you got to pay rent. What's rent? Rent in other languages is called tax. You got to pay taxes to the government. Otherwise, we'll chase you out of here. So therefore, it only refers to taxes and refers to specifically real estate taxes. And that is the only kind of situation of dina de malchus adina. There's nothing else that could be included. There are those who disagree. They say that's a general halacha. And this is really what I need over here. Is this is the Rama says in the second opinion that it is a general halacha applying to all kinds of different situations. And and therefore, for example, he picks some random halacha where we see this, and it says somebody goes ahead and lends money together with a mashkein. So this is very unclear. There's a shach and a smile over here that I get into a whole discussion exactly what this whole halacha is all about. Is yochel lemachrei? It's really the shach is somewhere else. Is yochel lemachrei acher shana hayal v'chein dina de malchusa? Is that the dina de malchusa says that if you took collateral, you went to a pawn shop and you lend the money, that they have a right to go ahead and sell whatever you left there after a year, and that's the law. And you have a right to do that. Al pi halacha hayal v'chein dina de malchusa. So even has nothing to do with taxes, has nothing to do with land. And afal pi kein is when the government goes ahead and passes a law, it includes your al pi halacha, you're bound by what the government said. And it says that you're allowed to go ahead and sell the mashkin after a year. You have a right to sell the mashkin after a year. V'cheinu iker, the commission is bar le'el simin shinun v'asiv zayin. So that is the main halacha, that's where I'm all paskins, is that the idea of dina malchus adina is a general halacha and it applies in any kind of situation that the government passes law with some restrictions, as we will see later on. Al kohanim, this is the sugya that we're dealing with over here. So it's a general halacha, according Lamaisa. We don't limit it only to taxes, and we don't limit it only to things that are relevant to the ground. And we say it's a general halacha. Now the question is, of course, where does dina de malchusa dina come from? So the Gemara mentions it in many places. You saw that today. Omer Shmuel, dina de malchusa dina. The Gemara says that a few times in Shas. Dina de malchusa dina, that the laws of the government or the king's that the king passes is dina. It is a din. The Gemara doesn't really say dina de malka dina, but dina de malchusa dina. So it's really the government. So lemaisa, at the end of the day, we have the statement from Shmuel, and that is halacha. The question is, but where did Shmuel get this from? There's no hint anywhere in the Gemara to where this comes about. And where did Shmuel know that dina de malchus? Maybe dina malchus is lav dina. Who says it has to be dina? So over here, there's about 8 theories at least where it comes from. The Rishbam in Bava Basra says that it comes about because going to way back whenever a government starts, so it's usually formed by the people that live in that area, that they accept upon themselves that form of government. And since the people accepted it upon themselves, it therefore becomes binding upon themselves and on future generations, that's the way that this place is set up. And therefore, you have to follow the rules. So there are those who therefore say, if there's some kind of military power, that Chais comes from the state itself, like you have a coup of some sorts, or something else like that, maybe it wouldn't apply the dina de malchus adina in such a situation. There's another, the Ran says, the famous Ran, which we just saw is in Halacha, that the Ramah quotes that, is that it's all based, the Ram brings down a Shita from Tosfos, is that because the king can go ahead and chase everybody out of the country, because it's his land, it belongs to him, it belongs to the government, and therefore since it belongs to them, they could tell you either pay up your taxes or leave. And we saw the repercussions of following that line in the reasoning limits it to taxes that are on land. The next thing is, there's another opinion, which is the Rajva says, is that it's everyone is the slave of a king, and everyone's a servant and slave, and you're mechuyev to listen to the king. And so there, the Achronim struggle, mechi teisi, why am I a slave to the king? I mean, whoever heard of such a thing? So the Dvar Avram says an interesting pshat in that, is that that's based on the concept of kibush mulchama. As we know, the Gemara tells us in the Masechtas Gittin that if a king goes ahead and conquers, it belongs to him. There's something called kibush mulchama, kinyan kibush, in the beginning of the fourth parak. Not the beginning, in the middle of the fourth parak. And so based on that, the king goes ahead, and when he becomes the leader of the country, so he becomes the de facto owner of everybody, and that's why everybody has to listen to them. Okay? There's another svar, as the Kiryat Sefer says, that is that we find that Shmuel Hanavi, when the Jews ask for a king, and so Shmuel gets very upset with them and says that you're rejecting me and you need a king instead. So he goes and he gives them a whole shmooze. He says, you're going to regret the day that you asked for a king. Because until now, there's nobody running the country. It was a shtickel hefkerdik, as it says in Shoftim. But Kol Ish Asher Yosher B'Inav Yaseh, everybody did whatever they wanted to do. But he says, now you're going to regret it. Because the king could come along, take away your sons to work here, and your daughters to do that, and to take away, and then they can confiscate things from you. So he lists off a whole bunch of things. And Mimela, so we learn out from over there that those are the powers of government. The powers of the governments can require people to do things. They can confiscate things. They can, all sorts of things. So Mimela, so that's what the Kiryat Sefer says the source is. Devin also says there's something in Gittin, previous to the part of the Gemara you were learning, right before the Gemara you were learning today, is there's a little Rashi over there that seems to indicate, it's not 100% clear in Rashi like that, but it seems to indicate from Rashi that it's based on Sheva Mitzvahs B'nei Noyach. Is that we have Dina de Malchusa Dina, because since the Torah required that every nation have laws, and therefore there's a halacha called, there's this concept of Dina, if you have to have laws, you have to have to listen to the laws, so there's this concept of Dina de Malchusa Dina. There's a another svar there's a Gemara in Shavuos that we'll be having shortly, I guess, in Daf Yomi, is that says, and it's a midrashim also like that, is that a government has a right to go ahead and to enslave its people to do its work up to the point where they kill 1/6 of the people, and that's how difficult the work could be, and we learn now from a pasuk, so if a government can do that, so obviously they have a power to require people to listen to them. Some slaver says that. There's others that argue that it's maybe based on the concept that we have by Bezdin. There's a din of Hefker, Bezdin, Hefker, that Bezdin has a right to go ahead and play around with your money as they see fit, and that applies to a government too. And there's finally, there's a Chuvas HaGoyim that they dug up, is that seems to say, and this is a very important thing, is the Ribbono Shel Olam created the world to work because there are governments, as we see in Pirkei Avos, right? Pirkei Avos says, if it wouldn't be for the So Lemaisa is, you need a government to work the world. So the Ribbono Shel Olam made the world to work with governments, and that's how people work. So obviously you have to listen to them, otherwise the whole thing doesn't work. So Mamela, it's a Svara Chitzayna, that this is, has to be that Dina de Malchus Adina. Okay, so we have all these different pshatim. Each of these pshatim has interesting ramifications to it, but at the end of the day, we know that the halacha is going to be Dina de Malchus Adina, and as we saw in the Rabbah, halacha l'maisa, it applies to all different kinds of laws. It's not restricted only to taxes, not restricted only to land. This is a general law that applies. Now, the problem is, so that's very good. There's a Gemara, you don't have this over here, but there's a Gemara in the Nedarim, is it's talking about taxes, and the Gemara says, cheating on taxes, and the Gemara says, you're not allowed to cheat on taxes. The Gemara says, why not? Because Shmuel said, Dina de Malchusa Dina. There's no one that argues on that. The problem is that we said that the Ramah wants to follow the opinion that it's a general halacha. The problem is, it seems to be an issue with the Gemara that you were learning over here. The Gemara is talking about kol ha'shtaris ha'olam be'er koi. Right? The Mishnah tells us that any kind of shtar that was approved in a er koi shloiv dekechavim, afal bishachaysmeim loiv dekechavim, kesherim, chutz megite noshim v'shechuri avodim, is that any kind of shtar, except for those that deal with the freeing of slaves and with the divorce document to get a woman out of her marriage, is these, except for those kinds of documents, if you have a document in a court, it's a valid document in halacha, it's a halachically valid document, and even though Goyim are signed on it. So the question is, those are not kosher eidim al pi halacha, and yet the shtar has halachic validity. And the question is, what is this based on? So the Gemara says, Amr Shmuel, now, one second, sorry, I skipped a little bit. And so the Gemara wants to know, that's good, that we could rely on such a shtar as a raya. We'll say that, you know what, if the courts went ahead and they approved such a document, and you have Goyim signed on it, and that's considered to be a fair document, so then you could trust that this thing happened. So therefore, it could be a raya. You can go ahead and bring a proof from such a piece of paper that this really happened. So that's called a shtar, right? That's not a problem. But the Gemara says, when you need the shtar to do something, when you need the shtar to go ahead, when you need the shtar to go ahead and to affect a change. So for example, like we had in the Mishnah, Kitei Noshim, it's the shtar that makes the Gerishim, or Shechurei Avodim, it's the shtar that makes that happen. There's also something called Shtari Matana, is if you go ahead and you give a gift, and there's no money involved with the transaction, there is no other Kinyanin, what makes the land go from Reuven to Shimon? And the answer is, what makes the land go from Reuven to Shimon is none other than the shtar itself. When I go ahead and we hand the shtar to the person receiving the gift, so now all of a sudden that piece of land belongs to him. He received the shtar, and now it's so the shtar itself has to create the change. So the Gemara says, if you have a shtar that's written by Goyim, if it's for a proof, okay, so you have a court that said this happened, or they didn't lie, and we could trust them, and whatever, this is a good document according to the law, so we're going to follow exactly what it says, because we know that's what happened. But if you need a shtar to do something, and the shtar is a dead shtar, halpi halacha, the shtar is meaningless. So how could you go ahead and create a kinyan with a shtar that is dead? It doesn't have any power to it, because in halacha it's meaningless. You have goyim signing on it, they're not kosher witnesses, the shtar needs witnesses, and so this is a nothing. So how could you use it? How could you use it to make a kinyan? And this the Gemara answers. So Amar Shmuel is Dina Malchus Adina. That's the Gemara's first teretz. So the Gemara says, Eino Chanami, half a dick of thing. Is that the law of the government is so powerful that if they say that this is a kind of shtar that can go ahead and change the ownership of this piece of land, and we take this piece of land that used to belong to Reuven, and Reuven hands the shtar to Shimon. Shimon now has the shtar, and he made a kinyan on the shtar. It's his piece of land. Why? Because Dina de Malchus Adina. It's not true. It's not a dead shtar. It's a live shtar. It's not based on the laws of the Torah, but it's based on the laws of Dina de Malchus Adina. That's the first teretz of the Gemara. The Gemara's second teretz is no, is that you don't say that. Toni chutz mekigit einoshim, is that eino chanami. It only works for a shtar raya. It does not work to energize a shtar. Meaning when you have a shtar, when you have a shtar, is eino chanami, is it has to be live. I'll be the entire, and you need to have Adam, you need to be written properly, And then it'll be a star. And then you can go ahead and make a kinyan that it should go from Reuven to Shimon. But if you have it that a Geisha court did it, it's not going to work. So now the question is, one second, what happened? The first answer of the Gemara was, is that the star has power, it's alive. Why is it a live star? Because the power of Dina the Malchus of Dina went ahead and said that this star, just like our stars in the Torah that are written with Kasher Edom Al Pi Halacha, that they are stars that have they're alive, they're able to do things, they're able to change the status of who owns this piece of land. So similarly, is in a Geisha world, and therefore the government, they made it like that, and that applies even to Jewish people, is that we could change the ownership based on a star, based on Dina de Malchus Adina, because it has the energy of that star comes to Dina de Malchus Adina. But on that, the Gemara says, is that we don't, that's the first teretz of the Gemara, and the Gemara says the second teretz, no, is that it doesn't work. So the question is, why not? Why does it not work? Why does it not work? So over here, there's a major pileup of Rishonim. At the end of the day, I'm going to follow the approach of the Chazon Ish, where he manages to pretty much, not 100%, push all the Rishonim into one direction. That's not the only Mahalach. There are other approaches to this, which are much more complicated, but just to keep it simple, is we're going to try to push everything together. So if you would read the tour, you get the distinct impression that there's some kind of basic machlokes over here. The tour brings, says Shtari Mekach Umemkar is okay, whatever, let's skip that right now. Let's go to the main part of it here. Aval Shtari Matanis. It says, let's say I have a star that's a star matana. A person says, I hereby am granting you my field. It's yours. So the Torah says that the shtar is making the kinyan. There's nothing else transferring this property. Just the shtar. There's no money. There's no other chalipin. There's no nothing. And the goyim are signed on it. So Einam klum. They're nothing. Afilu nimtzu b'fnei Eidei Yisrael, even if Jews watched it being handed over, but since it's signed by Goyim, the shtar is worthless. That is like the second teretz in the Gemara. The shtar is dead. Even though there's Dina de Malchus Adina, the shtar doesn't help the shtar. On this, the Rosh says,
whose land are they in?
Hmm?
In that case, who's
Reuven's. Reuven, there's a guy, Reuven, wants to give it to Shimon, and
is it a Geisha government?
It's a Geisha government, and they pass a law that you get, you go to the court, and they'll approve this thing, and they'll stamp it, and they'll give it to you, and you hand it over to Shimon, and Shimon's now the proud owner of that piece of land. You take your quick claim deed, you hand it over, and that's all you need to do, and you don't have to have Jewish witnesses on the bottom. You could have gotten your secretary to sign on the bottom. It doesn't make a difference who signs on the bottom. Right? But it doesn't work. It says Al Pi Halacha that will not work. Is because of Avodah Yaneh Rajzal, Minig Amelo Shloyas Shum Shtar El Bifnei Arkois. He brings the Rush, says that if the government passed a decree that you have to make the stars in front of a bezdin, as how you call stars anazim berkois kesher. If the government passes, you must do it like that. So then it is kosher, according to this Gemara. So that's an interesting thing. And then he brings down the Yad Ramah argues. So let's look at it like this. There are three, so that's the Rush adds. The Rush says this funny thing. The Rush says if the government cares about it, then all of a sudden the Gemara changes. Meaning, we go with the second opinion in the Gemara that a shtar is, this is what the Rush holds, is that the shtar is dead. You don't say dina de malchus adina. Unless the government says, all of a sudden, if the government says, you must do it in court like this, this is the way you must do it, otherwise it doesn't work. So all of a sudden, dina malchus adina works. So what's happening over here? This is a strange thing. The Gemara gave us two options. The Gemara says, either dina de malchus adina energizes the shtar, or it doesn't energize the shtar, which we haven't figured out why yet. And then the Rush adds another thing. And oh, by the way, even though the Gemara says in the second opinion that it doesn't work, but if the government would get up there and they say, no, this is the only way to do it. If you're going to do it with your own guys and everything, Jewish guys, like, it's not going to work. You must do it in court. So then it would work. What's happening over here? Talk the Chazainish like this. The Chazainish says there's a whole bunch of opinions. He says the first opinion is like the following. He says the Ramban and the Ran. And says that they hold, and it's interesting because you can learn that this turns into a huge machlekes, but he literally focuses everyone into one thing based upon what this Rush just told us. Is that number one, he says like this. He says that there's the opinion that there's no machlekes in the Gemara. How do you reconcile this Gemara? We ask the question, is Dina de Malchus Adina is opinion number one and it energizes the shtar. Opinion number two is that you don't say Dina de Malchusa and it doesn't energize the shtar. So he says no. He brings down that the Ramban and the Ran say that what the Gemara means is something totally different. The Gemara says Dina Malchusa Dina. And when the government says that a shtar is kosher, that makes it kosher al pi halacha. That means when Reuven is selling a piece of land to Shimon, you can use such a shtar to effect the change. Dina de malchus adina. But what do you mean the next answer in the Gemara says? That's not true, it doesn't work. So they say, no, that's talking about in a place where there is no dina de malchus adina. That's how the Ran and the Ramban learn. They say that in a place where there is no dina de malchus adina, then obviously, if the government didn't make any rule, so then it's not going to work because there is no dina de malchus adina. So the simple understanding of this opinion is that they hold that what trumps everything and what's the most important, the svara of dina, if it's dina malchus adina, they make the law, so that becomes a halachic tool and you're able to use it to transfer a property between two Jewish people. And that's the number one. That's number one opinion. He then goes ahead and brings Rabbeinu Yoina. Rabbeinu Yoina in Bava Basra and the Rajba and Gittin say he brings that according to the second opinion, they take a different approach, which is not going to make a difference at the end of the day. They take an approach is that the first opinion of the Gemara says, Dina de Malchusa, Dina. Right, that was the first approach in the Gemara. And it energizes the shtar. The fact that the government says it's good makes it a halachically live document and it can make halachic changes. That's that opinion. Then there's the second opinion in the Gemara that says, no, it doesn't work. Right? That's the second teretz in the Gemara. So Zok de Chazayin Ish is that what that means is the following. Is that in essence we agree with the Gemara. To Dina de Malchus Adina. But when does Dina de Malchus Adina happen? And this is an important thing. Zakta Chazainish, what's being said in that second teretz of the Gemara, is that when Reuven is selling a piece of land to Shimon, the government could care less what you do. And since the government could care less, you could transfer it any way you want, assuming, right? Remember, that's where the Rush is going to come in 1 minute. If the government, because hey, Reuven, who cares? Reuven sells all to Shimon, you know what? This is like, not maybe not nowadays, it wouldn't be like this, but they could care less. And therefore, when Reuven and Shimon are dealing with each other, so what they have to do is they have to follow the halacha. Because since the government is between two Jews, and if they want to work it out between themselves in some other way, that they're going to feel that that's the way to work it out, that's fine. Memela, that's the shot in the second teretz of the Gemara, is the Gemara is telling us they don't care about us. And therefore, since they don't care how two Jews interact with each other, as long as they work it out, so that we don't care. I'll give you another mashal quickly. For example, which we'll talk about later on, is let's say you have a question of Yerusha. So the government says that the Yerusha, let's say the parents die and now the children are getting the money, is they should split it equally between the boys and the girls. So if you make up, we don't want to divide it differently. Does the government care how you want to divide it? No. You could do whatever you want. And if you could do whatever you want, so of course you have to do what the halacha says. There's no dina de malchusa dina to go ahead and override what the halacha says. Similarly, if you have the government could care less how you transfer it. Today it's not like that, but they could care less. You would use this kind of deed, use that. So if the government doesn't care what I do, so then once again, I can transfer the ownership any way I want. You have to do it al pi halacha. So you can't go ahead and get a geisha document because the maisa, you can't get a geisha document because al pi halacha, it doesn't work. And kol zman that the government wouldn't care what you did as long as you take care of it yourself between the two of you, so then you got to do it al pi halacha. So that is the Rabbeinu Yonah's opinion. So he says, what is the first opinion of Gemara hold? He says, once you went to the court and you wrote the document, he says that calls that you walked into the court already, and therefore, once you're there, you're already in the world of Dina, the Malchusa Dina. And therefore, that's why the document works. So that's the machloikis in the Gemara. The first answer of the Gemara says, Dina Malchusa Dina. The minute you walk into the court, you're already involving yourself with the government, and therefore the shtar that you write there has energy to it. And it's able to transfer the property from Reuven to Shimon. The other teretz of the Gemara says, no, is that you're still dealing between two Jews. The fact that you walked in there, you shouldn't have walked in there in the first place. And the fact that you walked in there is wrong. Get out of there and write a shtar according to halacha. It's not going to help the fact that you went there that all of a sudden now I'm dealing with the government and therefore such a shtar works. So this is what the Chazayna says with the Rabbeinu. This is how the Rabbeinu Yoina goes ahead and explains these two opinions in this. He has a tzad to say over here is that Eino Chanami is, let's say they transferred the land according to this understanding and they went ahead and they got involved. They went to court over it. They went everything. They Shaloi al pi halacha. You don't have to go to court. First, I have to go to Bezin. But they went to court. So, Eino Chanami is Dr. Chazaynish. Even if we paskin with the second explanation of the government, that when you go into the court and you start writing up the shtar, that it does not work because it's still dead, because why did you do this for? But if you completed the whole process, you went to a court case and you fought it over, it would work up yalacha. Because at that point, it's clearly dina de malchusa dina. He says, maybe the person's going to have to give it back because he did shloi al pi din, and maybe whatever, I'm not going to get into that. But al kolponim is once you get involved with the government, Zakta Chazaynish, of course you're going to say dina de malchusa dina. Just like the Rush says. The Rush says, if they're makbid, everyone agrees that the shtar is going to work. And so on and so forth. He goes to the Rush and he goes to the Rambam. At the end of the day, that's the basic thrust of what the Chazayin says, is that Eino Chanami, even though there's a tzad in the Gemara that seems to say that Dino de Malchusa Dino won't work, and they are definitely Rishonim who learned based on that Gemara, that's the opinion that we saw before in the Ramah, that the Ramah said, no, it only works on taxes, and there's an opinion that says it even works only on land. And those opinions base themselves on this Gemara. You know, it's very clear in the Gemara, because the Gemara, the second answer says, is that Dina Malchusa Dina cannot make a shtar work. But what the Chazayin is saying is that everyone else seems to disagree with this, and they learn that it's a general halacha, and therefore Dina the Malchusa Dina works, but only if the government cares. And that means you have to, you could make the government care by getting yourself involved with them. But at the end of the day, if the government cares about what you are doing, there's a din of dina, the malchusa dina. So this is an extra little fact that we learn out from this Gemara, according to the Chazon Ish, which is very vital, is that Eino Chanami is that we say Dina de Malchusa Dina, but we always have to be able to evaluate, does the government care about this or not? This is the Chazon Ish's approach. It's not Mochruch. There seems very much other Achronim would disagree with this, and they would have a different approach, but at least that's the way he's going with this. There's another little thing that skip this for a moment. So let's go back a little bit and let's look. So what do we have so far? We have that Dina de Malchusa Dina is a general halacha, except that we have to know when the government cares and when the government does not care. Let's go through some examples of this, some other ideas where we find that Dina Malchusa does not work. We just gave one example. The government doesn't care, according to the Chazon Ish, according to almost all the Rishonim, is we're not going to say Dina Malchusa Dina.
Is it specific to the government, or can you have, if you have a proprietor who is not active, would that be the same?
That what do you mean it's not makbid?
I'm just saying, if you have a company that's not makbid on their on whatever they say their laws are, would that have the same halacha?
No, absolutely not. Okay, so for example, there's another thing that you don't say dina de malchusa dina on court decisions. So what does that mean? So there's something in America called common law, right? There's two branches of law. There's statutory law, and there is common law. Statutory law means different laws that the government passes that you have to keep. There's other kinds of laws that the only reason why people keep them is because, why do they keep them? Because a court before them already decided that that's what you should do. And you have some of these laws that go back 1,000 years ago, and it's Allah Abdullah's. But it's like you look in the Gemara and you see that this is what they paskin back then, so we follow what was being done back then. So the first thing is that's not considered to be Dina de Malchus anymore. Because since it's only based upon the minig of what somebody did way back when, and it was never declared to be a binding, so therefore that would not be considered to be Dina de Malchusa. The only thing you could make an argument is that if the government declares formally that this is the rules that we are going to follow, so it's not because of the common law, it's really becomes also statutory law, but whatever. I don't know if there's any, you have to speak to some attorney or some professor of law to find out exactly how common law becomes part of what we do in the government. Another thing is like we just said a moment ago, we have the Chazon Ish that says if they don't care, so then we have to go ahead and do what we need to do. This is a very common situation. So when we're dealing between two Jewish people, is very often a lot of the things, you can go to court and they'll tell you one thing, but you come to Bez and they'll tell you something else. But they really don't care. They really don't care. If you settled the disagreement between the two parties and it's fair and everything was wonderful, they don't have a problem with that. So therefore, in such a kind of situation, we don't say Dina de Malchusa Dina. We mentioned a moment ago about talking about a case of Yerusha. I'll give you another example of that, which is very common and which is a hot topic. It depends who you speak to about this. And once again, we're following only the Chazon Ish's Mahalach. It might make a difference whose opinion you follow here. But let's say when people are getting divorced. So it's a very common thing in the United States of America today is that when you go ahead, so of course the get has to be written, as it says, Chutz Megitei Noshim, that's a Dvar Pasha, you have to write a get in a Bezdin properly and everything. But with every get, or almost every get, there is some kind of agreement that goes along with it. Part of the agreement has to do with how the joint property is shared afterwards, or not shared anymore, but split between the two parties. And so there's a concept in general laws called marital property. Is that marital property that came about while they were being married, is that it gets shared 50-50 between the husband and the wife. Okay, so according to, you go to court, And in some states, it's mamash written in law, like you can barely budget. It's like in the state of Florida, it's very hard to budget. And they literally count up how much money is the thing, and they split. You take the bank accounts. So if the husband brought the money in from beforehand, obviously it's his. And if the wife brought it, it's hers. All these are generalities. But anything that they made while they were together is that kind of money gets split 50, 50, 50 to the husband, 50 to the wife. And they have lots of good svaras why that should be like that. And that's what they do. The truth is, if you would go to a Beis Din, L'chaira, it would be that the wife gets a ksuba, which can range anywhere from about $250 to $40,000, depending on which pasuk you hold like. And it's an interesting shaila exactly how to pasuk and how much it is. Rav Moshe, when he was alive, used to give like $8,000 for a ksuba. That's what he held what it was worth.
So it's supposed to be 1 year's worth of expenses.
That's how it started out. But it gets much, much more complicated than that. But anyway, because we actually write, we say 200 zuzim plus 200 zuzim plus the thing, and he's makabel kol kibel all of 200 skukim, right? May is the masayim skukim, masayim skukim. So everything altogether is 200 skukim. So what are the skukim? You know what skukim are? Anyway, I'll tell you what the skukim is, but that's a whole other shir. But when you figure out what the chassan says, he's going to give his wife 200 skukim. So he has to give her 200 skukim. Okay, so what are 200 skukim? So it's a huge machlekes, and it starts anyway down from $250 to $40,000 maybe. A kitzur amaisa. So, okay, so the husband wants to go to Beis Din, and the wife wants to go to court. The shaila is, now we have a big argument here. We have dina de malchusa dina, and we have halacha, and there. The wife has no right to almost anything. When anything she brought into the family, she has a right to. Maybe she has a right to other things, maybe. But in general, this idea, the husband was working and everything, and she was staying home and everything else, and she gave up her job because of that. That's irrelevant in halacha. And lamais, the bottom line is she gets a ksuba plus whatever really is coming to her, and that's it. So where do we draw the line over here? So, but the answer is, what we just saw a moment ago, is you have to realize is lots of other people, it's not only Jewish people, lots of other people make agreements. And they make all kinds of agreements and settlements, and they're not going to fight over it. The government doesn't care if you make a settlement. What the government probably does care, and this is just one svara, not everyone agrees with this, is what the government cares is that the wife should not be left out from whatever situation in the cold, basically. They don't need someone who spent their years of their life being married, not having anything, and all of a sudden being dumped on the street and being left as a quote-unquote a ward of the state. Like, you know, what's she going to do? What's she, you know, she's going to get child support, but she needs a lot more to support the children than that. Like, how do you go ahead and deal with such a situation? So at a certain point, the government does care. So if we go to a judge, and you tell him, well, we're doing the ksuba thing. And because you need the judge to go ahead and approve the divorce to make it a legal civil divorce. And he looks at the agreement. He says, ain't going to go. This is not something that's acceptable once the woman is independently wealthy. This is not going to go. The fact that she agreed to something like this is not acceptable. Throw the agreement out. They care about it. That gives the Beis Din a right to go ahead and to push through a settlement, which maybe doesn't have to be 50-50, which is sometimes very extreme, but lemaisa, they can make a settlement, something that's fair and good for both of them. It doesn't have to mean that the husband is going to be put into poverty because he has to literally give up 50% of everything that he has. So sometimes you can make a settlement for less than that. So I'm not going to get involved with what a person should do. This is not a loch lemaisa. I'm just saying this is one svara that's out there that where we see that dina, it's mamish nagia loch lemaisa, dina de malchus adino, literally turns the halacha over, and is a place where we draw the line that some things are, we do say dina malchus adina, and for some things we don't say dina malchus adina. You have to make somewhere in the middle. Beis Din has to come up where the government really cares and what's important for them, and what we try to do, which is be as close as possible to what the halacha is. There's another thing.
Can we stop for one thing? Is it what you're understanding from
there is that possibility. If there would be makbid on that, you would have to do that. Yes. You would have to do that. But at least according to the Chazon Ish, once again, I'm prefacing this is not a halacha l'maaseh share. This is just to learn through the sugya and we're following one path over here. Yes, so that would be the case. You would have to do that, but once again, that's only if they're makbid on it. If they're not makbid, if you can make a settlement, so, and they will go along with it, so then you have no right to go, whatever, to do something beyond that, which is not acceptable. Another thing is, sometimes you have dina de malchusa, dina colliding with something we're trying to do al pi halacha. So I'll give you something, I don't think it's relevant this man hazeh, but this was relevant in Poland, and the Divrei Chaim talks about it. Is every year we go ahead and we go to the Rav, and we make a mechiras chametz. Okay? So the Divrei Chaim says, there's no way in the world, right, there's the Sanzer Rav, and Chaim Sanzer. And so he says there's no way that you go to the government and go to court and try to enforce. If the guy would try to enforce the sale of the chametz, they would throw him out on his head. They think this is a good sale. It's a nechtegetag. They don't mean it. They gave you a whole drasha about they're going to come by after they finish the sale. They're going to come by and buy it back from you after Pesach's over. And you never saw the chametz. You don't know what it is. There's no way. This was done for religious purposes. He says that's borer by him. And he says haraya is that they don't even bother collecting taxes. Whenever you make a sale, there's a sales tax, and there's no sales tax over here. So I'm not going to go in America. Maybe it's a little bit different because maybe there's exclusions in the law with sales tax. I'm not going to get into this. But this is what the Divrei Chaim says. He says in Poland, the way it was guaranteed that al pi dina de malchusa, this is not considered to be a sale. But he says, interesting thing, he says that what we're dealing with mitzvahs is over there is absolutely, it does not count dina de malchusa. We don't look at not lakula and not lachumra. Right? Even lakula over here, we don't care. The fact that a guy would not be considered to be the owner of it is irrelevant. Al pi halacha, we sold it, and that's all that counts. So this is a fascinating thing because it comes out that maybe al pi din, the Jew would be able to recover it from the guy, but lamaisa al pi, right, because of dina de malchusa dina, but lamaisa at the end of the day, as far as the mitzvah is concerned, they bring a Shari Ephraim says like that. It's one of the Shas Vachuas from hundreds and hundreds of years ago. He says when it comes to mitzvahs, is we don't take that into account, dina de malchusa dina. And I guess once again, it's because the government doesn't care. The government doesn't care. It's probably that's using that Chazainish Svara once again. When you're doing dealing with mitzvahs, they really don't care. It's sold, it's not sold, what's the difference? So at the end of the day, they really let you sell it. If you want to sell it to the guy like that, yeah, let it be sold. Got it. And their courts are not going to hold like that, but they don't care what we do when it's involving a mitzvah. And therefore, it's not a problem. We saw this before. We said that it also has to be this is an interesting thing. As another tnai in Dina de Malchusa is they have to be equally fair to everybody. We saw before if they want to put a special tax on a special group of people, which is common in the United States of America, they put a tax on this, and they don't put a tax on that. And that you can't do all based on Dina de Malchusa Dino. So the...
people who have a certain profession, they get taxed.
So brought down in Shulchan Aruch is that if you go ahead and you try to put a tax on a certain profession, you can't do that. You can't go ahead and do such a thing. However, there's an interesting thing which creates a lot of headaches in the Paiskim if they don't know how to deal with this, because it's a stira in Tura Moz, which happens to be a stira in Tura Maharix. Both halachas come from the same sefer, is that if they go ahead and they put a tax on Jews and not on the Goyim, that's considered to be a fair tax. And so the Paiskim struggle with that. If you have to be fair to everybody, why is that fair? I mean, I don't know, it's hard to find the Teretz. The push of the Teretz L'Chayr is that the Poiskim are looking at it as like Jews are Am B'fnei Atzmon. We're like a separate nation. We're not considered to be, by Goyim L'Yizchashav, we don't count it among the Goyim. And then the Goyim have a right based on that to go ahead and to put a tax on Jewish people, even though they don't put it on the Goyim. Okay, so whenever next time you compare the taxes are too high on Jews, you got to keep that in mind, that they're allowed to make it higher than the Jews.
Is different tax brackets considered safe to everybody?
I don't know, that's a good question. There's a lot of these details, I don't know. Right. Before there was the, I forgot which amendment it was. What is it? Anybody remember? 17th Amendment? 16th Amendment? In 1913 or something, 1914 or 15 maybe, they passed this amendment that allows for income taxes, that it goes according to the income. Before that, it had to be a flat tax, exact, not only flat tax, it had to be the same tax on everybody. The government could only charge everybody $100 or whatever the number they would make up. And that's all they were allowed to do. They weren't allowed to do anything else besides that. And as far as collecting income tax, so yeah, I don't know, with brackets, you can make arguments here and there. And the reason why, I'll tell you why, and this is getting way, way off track. Why could it be a fair tax? Because the Gemara in Masechet Bava Basra tells us that when you collect taxes, is you're allowed to go ahead and collect it on the basis of two things. Is the things that are used for protection for property, you go ahead and you can do it according to the value of the property. If you go ahead and you do it according to protection for the people, so then you have to do it flat, the same number for everybody. It has to be equal for everybody. This is what the Gemara says. So you see, the Gemara tells us that there is grounds to, when the government helps, the idea is it's considered to be fair when you go ahead and you're charging according to the services rendered. So therefore, definitely in halacha, there'd be grounds to charge people a tax according to the wealth, how much money they have. Because I'm servicing a person who has more money, and so he needs more services because of that. He needs more protection. He has more advantage from living in the United States of America. That's how he made all his money. So he has a lot to gain from being here. But according to income, is not so posh. But let's leave that aside. Okay. But my sense assumed to be that that is a fair tax, and that's the, and whatever it is. Then the next thing okay, well, let's stop with that, and just give me one more second over here, and we'll just, let me just finish off with a few things the other way around, is, there's many situations, maybe tomorrow you'll see these in halacha, where Dina de Malchusa Dina says, gives certain laws. So for example, they might go ahead and say that that there's a restriction on how much rent you can charge. There's a restriction on how much rent you can charge, there's something like rent control. And do we have to keep that? Reuven and Shimon and their Elach Eden, and he said, I want to charge you more money, Shimon. When you want to live in my house, I'll charge you more money. Well, it's against the law. Between me and you, there's no dina de malchusa dina. And let's say they don't care, they do care, chaisnish, whatever it is. Let's assume that you would be able to get around that problem. So on this, there's a lot of swars out there, is that it becomes the minute. It becomes a binding minute. It's even though we don't follow this in Alpi because of Dina Malchusa Dina necessarily, but Lamaisa, at the end of the day, it does become a minute. Or for example, let's say they say a check, a debt that is more than a 6 months old, or whether 6 years old, or so 20 years old, you can't collect it anymore. So Lamaisa, the government doesn't gain anything out of it, and they have nothing to benefit from one way or another about this. They're just doing it that people should be able to move on in life. At the end of the day, it becomes maybe a minute, is that a chayv is given, that almanas, that after X amount of years, 20 years, the debt is not worth anything anymore, it's worthless. And so therefore, sometimes a dina, the malchusa dina, can be turned into a minute. And a minute is binding in halacha. Okay, this is relevant to going bankrupt. It's relevant to a lot of other things. I'm not going to get into the details of that. And another svar is that sometimes there is no dina de malchusa dina. As we're seeing, that there's all kinds of restrictions. And based on the reasons, we saw that maybe you can only do it on taxes, dina de malchusa dina. And we saw that maybe it's only on land things. And there are other kinds of situations. Maybe a Jewish government has no right to do things based on dina de malchusa dina. You should realize that a lot of people who live in Eretz Yisrael, they believe in that very strongly. And that's why they run around like a bunch of wild Indians, because there is no such thing as dina de malchusa dina. But the truth is, at the end of the day, there's a very big svara to say that even if there is no dina de malchus adina, as that is talking about taking money away from people, and they don't have a right to do that. But to pass laws that are for the benefit of the public, this is like similar to what we said from the Ga'inim beforehand. Is the Ribbono Shel'Olam knows that for human beings to be able to function, is you need to have laws in this world. So even if in those kinds of situations, sometimes we find you're going to come up with some kind of reason, is that there is no dina de malchus adina, but at the end of the day, is the government has a right to pass laws in order that be able that society should be able to function, and therefore even if you don't have dina de malchus adina, it will apply in such a situation. At the end of the day, so we just to finish off, is that dina malchus adina is a general principle according to the majority of places. It applies to any kind of law, but once again, it has to be that the government really cares about it, and if the government does not care about it, it's not considered to be dina de malchus adina, especially when you're dealing between two Jews, when they're interacting with each other. Obviously, when you're interacting with goyim, that's a whole different parsha. There is no other law, so you have to base it on dina de malchus adina. But among Jews, is as long as they don't care, is we have to follow what the Torah says. But other kinds of things, there is a dina de malchus adina, which means you can't park in a place without paying the meter. But once again, if you think they don't care so much, you're going to run in for 2 seconds, you run out. It could be, there's different kinds of svaras. You have to be careful when you're speeding. And as we're saying at the end, all of these other kinds of situations of dina malchus adina, whether you'll see the halachic applications, is some of them, even if there is no dina malchus adina, but the government has a right to say such things, and they have a right to enforce such things, because without them, we would not be able to live as a functioning society.